Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch from sweltering iHeart Media. For some reason, the air conditioning on one side of the building is working just superbly. On our side of the building, not quite so much. But we will soldier on. We will power through. And however uncomfortable we are right now, the discomfort that we're dealing with is nothing compared to what's going on at the other end of the interstate. And, of course, that is what we will talk about tonight for hour number one here on the Big Blue Insider. 280-2287. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Toll free 800-606-4263. Kentucky fans who have taken a lot of guff through the years, or at least since Calipari got here, from Louisville fans now are getting a chance to fire back. U of L was stunned by the penalties today. And Curtis and I have been kicking it around all afternoon. I will tell you up front, I did not get a chance to watch it live. I've read everything I can. I was in a three-hour interview session while this was going on. It was driving me nuts. But I've had a chance to read up, and man, this was dramatic. And by the way, that noise in the background is the fan that is in the control room where Curtis is. Is it any better in there?
It's still warm.
Yeah, I can, yeah. But at least you got a little going on there in the background. To just put it bluntly, U of L officials were stunned, absolutely floored by the level of the penalties. I will say this. Even if you toss out what Pitino said, what Jurich said, what the acting president said, the one that got me was Chuck Smirt. And the reason was, or is, Chuck Smirt used to work for the NCAA. But what this tells you is this is a new day, and this was a rash of, for lack of a better term, well, let's call them improprieties at U of L that were never seen before by the NCAA. So the fact that U of L took itself out of the tournament in 15-16 and docked itself a couple of scholarships, that helped because they were not nailed with any more bans from postseason play, but it's likely they'll have to take down the banner from 2013. And, of course, fans being who they are, U of L fans made a lot of hay in 2012, teasing, well, it's worse than teasing, trolling Kentucky fans over how long before this one comes down under John Calipari and all that stuff. And now it's looking like it will be an unprecedented move by the NCAA where it would force U of L at some point to take down the 2013 championship banner. Now, what has to happen first is U of L has to answer to the NCAA with regard to which players were involved, how much were they involved in the ball games from, was it 2010 to 2015?
That's what they said, yeah.
And if indeed they were, my word, deeply involved with those games. I mean, if they were guys that rarely played, that would be one thing. But I've got to think there were players who were intricately involved in the games.
Well, Smirt said it would have been over 100 games in 15 NCAA games.
Right, so that's the span.
All those, what he was saying, those guys were involved in those games.
But how deeply?
I don't think it matters. If you touch the court, you made an impact on the game.
Well, at some point it says something like entry. You know, look, let's face it, it's going to happen. How can it not? If there are enough of those guys, I can't imagine that all those players were guys who rarely played or, you know, maybe scored a bucket here or there. So it seems like it is just a matter of time.
But that time's going to be longer because Louisville announced they're going to appeal today.
Yeah, so if you're waiting, if you're rubbing your hands and waiting to see that banner come down, like Curtis said, it may take more than a year because these committees don't meet all week all month. They might meet three or four times a year. So, you know, and we've talked about it before. That's why this case took so long. And that's why North Carolina's taken so long. Now, North Carolina, believe it or not, is on a grander scale. It's not as seedy as strippers and hookers, but it's still going to, I still think it's going to be big. A lot of people have given up and thought, now nah, North Carolina's going to get away. They're not going to hit them. And for some reason, I saw a tweet. I think someone was tweeting at Dana O'Neill about how all the NCAA never penalizes big-name coaches. Excuse me? Larry Brown, Jim Boeheim, Jim Calhoun, Jerry Tarkanian, John Calipari. Now, he wasn't directly penalized, but whose reputation has taken a bigger hit? Because, and ironically enough, similar situations, both at UMass and at Memphis. After the fact, it was determined that players he used at the time, and I will say, in my opinion, I don't believe he knew, talking about Calipari, I don't believe he knew that Marcus Camby's buddies had been greased by an agent when he was playing Camby, and Derrick Rose had been cleared by the NCAA's clearinghouse to play for Memphis. So they used him, and then after the fact, they decided he was ineligible. And that's why they had to take that banner down. So karma's tough, isn't it, Curtis?
Yeah, I mean, there were some people retweeting Louisville fans after Kentucky won their title saying that such things as, hopefully you hang that with Velcro because it's going to come down.
Yeah.
And so the whole rivalry-ing thing is kind of, it gets done a lot. And I think people wring their hands over too much. I haven't seen it too bad today because, I mean, it's weird that once Calipari was hired here, that was all the talk from Louisville fans. And now it's come back on them.
Exactly. And let us not forget now that when Calipari was at Memphis, there was a faction of Kentucky fans who thought he was crooked. So, it, like I said, karma can be a witch, only it's a word that rhymes with witch. And athletics directors everywhere constantly looking over their shoulders and checking their staff. I was with Mitch Barnhart doing an interview today, and he said this whole thing, I don't think he'd mind me sharing this with you, has caused them to redouble their efforts at keeping everything they do with recruiting on the up and up. But that's something that should be done all the time. And the saddest thing is that a Rick Pitino, a Tom Jurich, they give a guy like Andre McGee a job. That was a job that should have been a springboard to a solid coaching career, if that's what he wanted to do. That's how young people get started in this business. And Andre McGee should have used it the way he has seen. It's not like he didn't know how it worked. He came up, he played at Louisville, he played at the highest level. He knew ops directors while he was at U of L. And yet he used it for something tawdry and stupid and, to a point, illegal. Now, a lot of you are screaming about minors being involved. That is not the case. I will tell you this, that the authorities checked into the females, and evidently there was no underage female involved. And the youngest prospect involved on the recruit side was 16, which is the age of consent in Kentucky. So for whatever that's worth to you, I know some of you are disappointed by that, unfortunately, but there was no child trafficking involved. Now, I've seen some tweets by law enforcement people who believe that bringing recruits across state lines and plying them with sex could be criminal in and of itself. I'm not going to get into that, but I'm just going to say that I've covered four scandals at Kentucky through the years, two in football, two in basketball. Haven't been involved with one in football for, 14 years? Basketball, 28 years. And I'm thankful for that. I hate covering those stories. And so now my brethren over in Louisville are having to cover this. And in fact, one of them will join us at the bottom of the hour. Drew Diener's going to join us from ESPN Radio over there. Drew has been a part of the U of L network for a while. I don't believe he is currently a part. He was part of the UK network, and he's got a pretty clear head when it comes to this kind of thing. I heard some of my buddies on the radio sort of toeing the U of L line about the fact that these penalties were too severe. That has been the U of L opinion from jump. They were shocked by the level of severity. My question is, how could you not see this coming? This is all about using ineligible players, and just about everything falls in line with that. The money you've got to give back from those games Curtis mentioned, the possible, well, what they call the vacation. I always thought that was weird. I always thought it was vacating, yeah. But the vacation of wins. I mean, that's happened at several schools, maybe not on this level and not for this reason. There's not a whole lot here that I didn't think you couldn't predict what happened. And Patino only gets 5 games. If I'm Jim Boeheim, I'm saying, hey, I got 9 games, and this is only worth 5. Wendell's going to lead things off. How you doing, Wendell?
I am doing fine, sir. I want to know where the outrage is from the Louisville people, from the fan base, from the alumni, from the board of trustees, from the donors, from the outset. Jurich, even Ramsey and Patino all denied. And then a month in, well, we think some things might have happened. We don't think everything was true. A couple months later, it happened, but it wasn't us. McGee needs to come forward. They hire an attorney, self-imposed sanction. This should do it. Yep, we're good.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of arrogance there that the Louisville folks have put forward from the beginning. We didn't know about this. And, you know, there was no responsibility, hey, we're going to clean this up. I think that arrogance has probably caused them to get harder, hit harder. You know, today in his press conference, Patino lashed out. The people he's going to appeal to, he pissed them off royally today, in my opinion.
I think you're right.
And basically called out, you know, their morals. The people at Louisville need to do some self investigating here. We got everything that happened last week. We've got everything that happened with Patino back in 2009, and now we've got this. Isn't it time to start figuring out what we've got to do if we're Louisville to get things to a higher standard, to clean things up? And doesn't that start with getting rid of some people?
Well, to your point, and you make several good ones, I have heard outrage from U of L fans. The thing is, Wendell, you know, the squeaky wheels are going to be heard from first. And I have heard outrage from U of L fans who are disgusted by this, and some who have called for heads to roll. But right now, the acting president, who, as I understand it, very likely will become the president, is falling in lockstep with Patino and Jurich, saying, we should not have been hit this hard. So if he becomes the president, I think that you're just going to see more of this stonewalling by U of L. They did step in and say what happened was reprehensible and it shouldn't have happened and blah, blah, blah. But like I said, I don't see how they could not have seen this coming, because ultimately it comes down to using ineligible players.
When you get caught committing a crime in normal life, say you get a speeding ticket, do you get mad at the police officer for pulling you over? You shouldn't, because you were speeding.
No, but the metaphor they would use is, what if you got pulled over speeding and they gave you 3 years in jail? Their thing is, the penalties are too severe. But every time you've seen a school get nailed for ineligible players, don't they have to vacate wins?
That's happened in every single time there's been ineligible players. It happened in Syracuse. It happened. Yeah. It happened with Kentucky.
And look,
in 1989. And guess what? Kentucky did. They got rid of everybody.
You're right.
Not just everybody. Everybody.
Everybody. And as far as banners coming down, this is a first, because it would be a national championship banner. Western Kentucky had to take down the banner in 1971. This has happened before, and like we said, it happened twice to Calipari.
Nothing is going to change until Papa John, whoever else is on the board, you know, decides we want to clean this up. We want answers. he spoke out a few weeks ago about where's the money at? Where's the money that I'm giving? Where's the money all these donors are at? We're in bad financial shape.
Yep.
Well, money went to pay for strippers. Money has gone to
not
pay
much.
For an athletic director who makes twice as much money as the richest athletic director in the country at Texas. Yeah. No wonder he didn't go to Texas when the job was open. He's making twice as much at Louisville.
Take a pay cut. Thanks, Wendell. Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
By the way, that brings up just a heck of a point. They tried to defend themselves by saying, well, the strippers didn't cost that much, so we shouldn't be penalized as heinously as whether they were, you know, top grade. And you know, the NCAA would have none of that. The NCAA, and who was, I think Eric Crawford tweeted it, as he usually does so well. It wasn't the monetary value. It was the act itself. And for some reason, the two sides just couldn't get together on that. Well, guess who's going to win that argument? It's the people handing down the penalties. Drew Diener will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll take your calls at 280-2287. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch, back in a minute, 630 WLAP. The way you swept me off the field, you know you could have been a broom. The way you smell so sweet, you know you could have been some perfume. Waiting on this part right here. Sure, why Louisville did the things they did today. Curtis felt like it needed a musical interlude, so why not? Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider.
Well, I'm just trying to welcome you back from vacation with one of your favorite bands
well,
here.
Well, thank you very much. And what day do I come back? Well, it's a big one. It's my daughter's birthday. It's also Dwayne Peavy's birthday. I didn't know they shared a birthday. I saw that on Facebook. But it's a day that will live in infamy in U of L history. And Rick Pitino not going quietly, is he, Curtis?
No, he talked.
Not that he's going anywhere. But.
No, it was the press conference they had today at U of L after the NCAA levied these sanctions, included him, Chuck Smert, and AD Tom Jurich. And Smert did most of the talking, but Pitino and Jurich also spoke. And the first comment I'm going to play here is basically Rick Pitino making the case for why he didn't know this was happening.
You have to understand that in every situation, whether it's J.P. Morgan and someone in that organization has a problem, or a police chief has a problem with a sergeant, or in every department, in time, somebody does the wrong thing, and you try to uncover that right away. And you have to understand the circumstances behind all of this, and Tom alluded to it just earlier. This is the age of social media, even though we're not, Tom and I are not tied into it. In 4 years, not one piece of social media has come out, ever. It's almost impossible. That's the greatest hidden thing I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. If I tonight go somewhere, it'll be on social media that I'm there, within minutes that I'm there, or Tom or anybody else. So for 4 years, this never happened. All the security people never saw anything. All the managers never saw anything. And where the committee got it wrong is they thought this was a big fraternity, and it's not. It's not at all. This was hidden at the hours of the morning that nobody could possibly find out about.
I think that's a lame excuse.
So what?
I know. That's what I...
So what?
And me and you talked about this before the show. Pitino talked today, and I felt like every time he opened his mouth, I'm like, why are you saying that today?
Yeah.
You can say those things. That argument is completely accurate. It is amazing that this didn't come out in the age of social media, but it happened. It just didn't come out on social media. I mean, I don't understand. He admits, here's the weird part. He admits he's, you know, illiterate when it comes to social media, and then talks about how it didn't come out on social media. So either way, he wouldn't have known. Even if it had come out on social media, he probably wouldn't have known anyway.
Well, somebody might have pointed it out.
I guess, but
yeah.
it's just weird. They're like coming up with odd excuses.
Grasping at straws.
Very, very much
grasping
so.
Grasping at straws. Look, there are some arguments you might make against these penalties, but some of the ones they came up with, I've got to tell you. And I like Rick Pitino, and I like Tom Jurich. I don't work with them. I don't know them all that well. But what the things they were saying today left me really shaking my head. SMH. Drew Diener joins us. More comments from Patino a little bit later on. 630 WLAP. Because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel with you on a sweltering Thursday. The heat, though, on over U of L. How about that for a metaphor, Drew Diener? Drew Diener joins us from ESPN Radio over in Louisville. And I got the impression, Drew, that they were surprised, the U of L brass, by how hard they were hit. And I'm wondering, should they have been? This was, they're calling it an historic penalty, but boy, the crime was kind of one in a million, too, wasn't it?
Well, they were stunned. Your first part is absolutely correct. I don't think anybody really had a genuine fear of the banner being in jeopardy before today. I mean, they knew it was in the realm of possibility, but not in really all in a likelihood. And you'd almost have to put it in a likelihood right now where things stand. And I think their biggest complaint with this is they feel like that the NCAA disregarded precedent and established a precedent. Now, you could certainly argue that you set precedents for historic things, and I think that's probably what the NCAA has done here, is decided that this is something that, you know, has to be made an example of, and I think that's exactly what happened there. They firmly believe that past history did not warrant what came down today.
You know, although this is a new era within the NCAA, which the Infractions Committee, which, of course, is made up by member institutions, but they decided a few years ago to put the vote to the membership and say, do you want us to treat each case individually, or do you want us to go on past precedent? And everybody said individually. But that makes it hard to digest, isn't it, when you're trying to figure out why they did what they did?
Yeah, and I think that's why you have the two confusing different penalties. I actually think the five-game suspension for Rick Pitino, based on what they've done in the past, it makes sense. I mean, you know, they gave Larry Brown 9 games. They gave Jim Boeheim 9 games. But I think their violations were different.
Oh, yeah.
In this one, with Rick Pitino, you know, with 5 games, they just feel like he delegated too much in terms of responsibilities, although some of their reasons do kind of baffle your mind. They complained that, no, not complained, they just said that, you know, he had Andre McGee in charge of checking people in at the dorm and being in charge of knowing what violations are going on, but that he never actually went to the dorm after 10 o'clock. Now, what head coach in America goes to a dorm after 10 o'clock?
Exactly. Thank you.
That's not a reasonable expectation.
I agree.
Some of the other things might be reasonable, but when they mention that multiple times, I mean, I can't imagine coaches go to.
No.
And if they come at 10:30, guess what? Whatever was going to happen would happen at 11:30.
Hey, thank
you.
You're exactly right. I've said that from day one, that I just think you're living in a dream world if you think head coaches everywhere do that. You hire somebody and you trust them to do the job. You used to work for me. You'd anchor the weekend sports. Did I call you every hour and say, now, Drew, are you doing everything right? No, I trust
you. Right, yeah.
You know.
Show's over at 12. All right, are you there? I mean, it's at 12:30. Have you logged everything?
That's
you
right.
Put everything away?
That's right.
Do you have any strippers up there in the sports office? I mean, these are questions you don't expect to have to ask. And by the way, for the record, no, we never had any strippers in the sports office.
I believe your answer was not as far as you know, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the body language, the tone, the reaction made by U of L's leadership?
Yeah, that was very telling. Rick Pitino and Tom Jurich both saying they've lost faith in the NCAA was a big, big statement there. They had the similar body language they had the day that the self-imposed penalty was announced. It was the same look. Pitino has been the most surprised person in all of this. I think, for whatever reason, he didn't think he was even going to get a suspension, which I don't understand why he would think that. Certainly no one over there envisioned this scenario today. And I'm looking through this, and I've been reading, like, you know, all the pages and pages of this, and I think the banner really comes down to two sentences in here, Dick. I mean, it states in here that they're going to have to vacate all regular season conference tournament wins in which ineligible student athletes competed from the time they became ineligible through the time they were reinstated as eligible for competition through the reinstatement process. Well, that's fine and dandy if you find it in real time and you can be reinstated. But the tough part about this, and I think this will be the basis for their appeal, is you can't do that retroactively.
Right.
If you would have determined in real time this was a four-game suspension, then you forfeit four wins. But if you don't find out about it until after the fact, then all wins are gone, and that's going to have to be the basis of their appeal, because that, unless you find in real time, you're absolutely have no, you're gone for the year, apparently. It seems that's going to have to be the basis of their appeal.
Yeah, I agree. And some of this, you just think they're going through the motions, the NCAA, with some of these penalties. But on the other hand, if you're going to hold their feet to the fire, then, you've got to word it that way. And it's confusing at times, but at times it's pretty blunt. I mean, it's a pretty good hit in the head for U of L, as we talked to Drew Diener of ESPN Radio over in Louisville, formerly with the UK Network, so he's worked both ends of the interstate. And unfortunately, Drew, I can't remember if you were around for the Mummy, or were you still in school? Okay,
I was there. I was a young cub reporter, yeah.
So you know what it's like to cover one of these things, unfortunately. Now you know what it's like to cover two of these things. But times change, and the way they do things change, and what happens behind closed doors changes. But when it all comes down to it, just follow the rules. And the fact that they tried to dismiss it, it was almost like they were saying, look, it really wasn't that big a deal. When it was, right?
Yeah, I think the mistake, I think the mistake Louisville made tactically in this is submitting some of the violations as level three violations because of the dollar amount of the strippers involved. And the NCAA basically said, we don't care whether you get a cheap stripper or an expensive stripper. The dollar amount is irrelevant.
Right.
It immediately bumps to a level one. I think that, now, does that cost them everything that happened? I don't know. But I think that was and Chuck Smart talked about that today. I think that was a tactical mistake on his part.
I agree with you. But you're never going to convince them of that as well.
No.
Reading between the lines that would be in bold print if you could do such a thing, I think are other things he had lost in all this. Recruiting restrictions, that will hurt. And the financial hit that Louisville could possibly take, it's going to be multi-millions, isn't it?
That's got to be one of the best four-year stretches of postseason success in the history of the tournament. 2012 Final Four, 2013 National Championship, 2014 Sweet 16, an unexpected Elite Eight in 2015. That's 11 wins in 4 years. I can't imagine there's more than, a handful of programs that have that level of success. I mean, obviously Kentucky, Duke. I mean, people like it. But for a four-year, I mean, I have to go back and look in the record books. That may be, even in the early 80s when Denny Crum in his heyday, that may be more wins because the tournament's bigger.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think they went to three out of four Final Fours, but didn't have to win as many games.
But yeah.
Financially.
Certainly the money.
Yeah. We know that, there are big budgets, but all those dollars are accounted for. Now they got to come. Now you've got the foundation mess going on. This is not a happy time on that campus.
No. And there are little things. Like you mentioned, there are some of the recruiting restrictions that people, again, I'm reading through the minutiae of this.
Yeah.
Like for the next several years, they can't host an unofficial visitor in any on-campus housing. Well, that's exactly Brian Bowen. When he came to town, he came on an unofficial visit, and he's staying in the dorm at that point.
Really?
I mean, maybe he would have paid for a hotel room, but there might be a recruit, like they got Bowen late in the game, who might say, look, if you can't house me, I can't come.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little thing, but it did happen here just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and like I said, it seems like, and you said, use the right word, it seems like minutia. But it all adds up, and I can't remember exactly how many, if they're going to lose scholarships, but those add up
very
quickly.
They lose one per year over the next 4 years.
That's what it is. That adds up. That's important.
Yep, certainly does. I tend to think those hurt you more in football, but just because of the numbers game of it, you get caught at sort of the position. It allows you, if you make a mistake in recruiting, that mistake is magnified. I mean, Mott Stockman, who was on the team, really they missed on. I mean, he wasn't that good. If you have two of those and you've got, a scholarship less and you get an injury or two, absolutely can rear its head.
Yeah, well, especially after the third and fourth years, And like you say, for football, it doesn't sound like much, but it's 10 here, 10 there pretty soon. you got a 1AA program. Well, in basketball, all you got to do is lose one or two for a few years, and you're really hurting to put a team together. Big picture, how do you think this shakes out for U of L when it comes to putting a team on the floor in the next few years?
I don't think that part's going to be – I mean, I think they're in really good shape moving forward. I mean, they've got, you know, arguably their best recruiting class coming in. They've got commitments in the junior class. You know, I think Luke Hancock's a member of our staff now. He was over at practice yesterday, and he said that this is be as good a defensive team because of their length of any that he's seen in a while, and wow. I trust his judgment on that. I mean, I think the future is good. I mean, that's the one thing about taking the postseason ban when they did. They ripped the Band-Aid off. And the recruits coming in moving forward don't have to worry about these punishments. I mean, these guys coming in don't care that the banner from 2013 could potentially come down. They care if they can win one when they're there, you know. Yeah. And so I don't think it affects the recruiting ability moving forward other than the image of it. And you don't never know when, you know, when that pops up if a parent says, you know, I've read all this, I want no part of it, even though I know it's in the past. I mean, I think that's the only way it could rear its head.
Were you surprised there was no further penalty in terms of a ban? I thought they might stick him with another year of not going to the tournament because that's a huge deal. And for U of L to do that on its own, I thought was massive, and apparently the NCAA did too. So they apparently will not miss any more tournaments, even though they got to give a lot of money back. Did that surprise you?
No, I would have been surprised if they'd gotten a multi-year ban. Okay. There's just not a lot of history of two-year bans out there just anymore. It's one that... if you really go back and look at it, there's just very few that sure they hit you with, you know, scholarships and things of that nature. But that's really, especially with basketball. I mean, that's why I think it's such a different deal. You know, like Ole Miss is banning itself from a bowl game this year. Well, who cares?
Right.
You know, it's college football's a regular season sport. They still get their great games. And if they miss the Liberty Bowl, they'll be
right.
fine.
That's right.
You know, I mean, but basketball, since the is a sport geared toward the postseason,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a reasonable question, you know, for fans. Would you, even though you experienced 2013, I mean, would you rather have had another postseason ban for this year or lose the banner? And I don't know that it's a definitive one way or the other on that.
You know, the last school I remember losing two postseason years was the one you used to cover right here in Lexington.
Yeah, and
it's been a while.
It's right, because Patino's first 2 years, that's right, were a part of that. And yeah, I think that may be it. You may have to go back to that team.
Yeah, well, times keep changing, and this story is going to be with us for quite some time. And plus, you guys got to keep an eye on the board on whether or not they hire a president anytime soon. This is a dark era in U of L sports, is it not?
I would say these are tough times for sure. I think the baseball team, that's the worst part about this, that
yeah.
It is an exciting, great group of guys on the baseball team with a great story to tell. And yet, you know, and they, just as luck is going today, I think they had mechanical issues getting out of town to Omaha today with their plane, right in the middle of all this.
Oh,
somebody
no.
tweaked it. I assume they got there fine, but they hit a delayed takeoff. But, you know, that's about goes the way things have gone over here today. Yeah, I think that's why the president may have that interim tag move at some point. I mean, if you have to go through this as an interim, I don't know what else you have to do during the job, my gosh.
Well, either that or it might make him rethink his career path. So.
yeah.
Well, Drew,
I remember like when Lee Todd started, didn't it? I mean, it seemed like he was like always, that was right in the middle of all that stuff over there that it felt like he was you know, in front of a podium as much as the AD was.
And he did not like it at all. That's a good memory by you. Drew Diener, you can hear him on our buddy over at 680 AM in Louisville. And watch him tonight on ESPN doing a little talk back with Michael Eaves, formerly of KYT. So two KYT alum. Did you guys ever anchor together?
I think we probably did a sports spectrum together. I mean, I say you got to feel like a proud papa as a former sports, you know, our manager over there getting us, you know, two guys on SportsCenter.
I'll be watching. Thanks, man.
All right, appreciate it, Dick.
All right, take care. And we'll be back in a minute here on 630 WLAP.
If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't.
That's the one right there. Curtis's way of welcoming me back from a few days off. Thanks to Mark Berger, to Ryan Lemon, to Curtis for covering for me while I was gone for a few days. John, did you miss me?
I did.
What's going on tonight, John?
Nothing much. The biggest thing about the Louisville thing.
Yeah, it was a little surprising, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, with all that, I'm seeing these step aside and resign.
Think so?
Yeah, like I had Sunday at the University of Kentucky.
Yeah, a lot of people agree with you, John.
John, how many years probation should Louisville have gotten?
Probably should have got a 5-year probation.
By Biggins. And how many how many games was Rick Pitino suspended or will be missing?
Five games. So he ought to be suspended for the entire season.
By Biggins. It's all about the fives, John.
I know it. And also, I heard Vincent talk that we could play a 20-game conference schedule. I'm for that if we're going to span the non-conference games like to 35 games. I'm for that if we're going to play 35 games during the season.
Now, wait a minute. You're Mr. Traditional, and you'd be okay with jacking up the number of conference games?
Well, if we're going to play more non-conference games.
Yeah, well, I'd be opposed to both, John, quite frankly. I think the season's plenty long as it is.
Yeah, but I wouldn't.
I know, but I wouldn't mind seeing them drop the conference tournament, mm-hmm. make the conference title mean more, and go back to playing the double round robin.
That's 18 games.
Play everybody twice.
That's for Arkansas, South Carolina, Missouri, Texas, and joining conference.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think the conference tournaments, I realize the value of them, but if you're going to end up playing more regular season games, you got to cut back somewhere, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also, we go by tradition, we're going to Georgia Tech, Tulane, and Swanee back in the Southeastern Conference.
Ah, John, the league would be too big then.
No, then we take it Arkansas, South Carolina.
Oh, you kick them out?
Yeah, to Missouri, Texas A&M. We go back to the old tradition. Yeah.
Well, South Carolina was in the SEC earlier.
Were they? I thought they joined in 1991-92 season.
They came back. I thought they were. No, they were an independent. That's right, yeah.
That's right.
I'm thinking of Georgia Tech, yeah.
So I was saying, why not bring Georgia Tech in, Tulane, and take out Arkansas, South Carolina, Missouri, Texas A&M, and go back to the original 13 Southeastern Conference.
You would just kick them to the curb?
I'm looking at the churches. No, what I would do with Arkansas, I'll go back with the Southwest Conference.
There is no Southwest Conference.
And need to bring that back again.
good luck with that, John. You know what? When you're in charge, John, it's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it?
It would be.
All right.
That would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Thanks, John. Just a few minutes left in this segment. Curtis has a few more comments from Rick Pitino.
Here's just one. The way I classified it is him just being defiant against the NCAA.
So what do you do? Do you say, let me pack it in, like this gentleman alluded to? Let me do something else in life. Let me go. Leaders lead. I plan on staying here and winning multiple championships, not just one. I plan on going to multiple Final Fours, not just one. And that's what leaders do. They lead the players they're coaching. They ask for forgiveness for what happened. One of your employees did. You were extremely contrite. I know the committee was sickened by it, but so are we. But we did not deserve what they gave us, and that's the bottom line. They made a very large mistake, and our faith has to be put in the hands of the committee going forward of appeals, because we are just as disappointed in what went on as the committee was. But. We did not deserve any of this at all. And we will fight every single bit to the end, and we will move forward because that's what leaders do.
He didn't sound very sorry.
No, sounded defiant. And he's right, leaders lead. And look, good for him. If he wants to stay in coaching and try to go to multiple Final Fours, that's fine. But I'll go back to what did they think was going to happen after – they had to have looked at other schools that were penalized for playing ineligible players. That would have been the one, and maybe they would have ducked it and dodged it. But because they're not talking about the money. They're not talking about the five games. They're talking about the vacation.
Yeah, and the one thing with this is, and it was Seth Greenberg was on ESPN Outside the Lines today earlier, and he was asked about this, and he really kind of disagreed with you guys. He thought the scholarship thing wasn't that big a deal because normally you have an open scholarship in most years. Like that could happen.
I could see
but
that.
He said all this appealing and everything, it just boils down to ego and legacy. And that's what Rick Pitino is fighting for. And that's why I think he is trying to stand up so brightly and said all these crazy things about how he's lost face in the NCAA and all this stuff. I think it's just his ego, and he wants to be remembered better than probably he will be.
Likely so. Coming up, we're going to shift gears in hour number two and talk about an interesting link on the UK campus between athletes and the military. You're not going to want to miss it. Back in a minute, 630 WLAP.
Thank you for listening to Big Blue Insider. I'm Curtis Birch. You can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Be sure to follow at Big Blue Insider 1. Like the Facebook page, just search Big Blue Insider and check out our website, BigBlueInsider.com. Also, subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, hour number two of our program, and we will indeed get back to discussing the controversial day over on the other end of the interstate at the U of L with regard to the NCAA. But I did want to drop in some information today about a facility that just opened up. It's not brand new, but basically was introduced to the public this week, and that's the UK Sports Medicine Research Institute. And they've been doing sports research on that campus for many, many years. But this kind of pulls everything in a way together under one roof. But there's also a really fascinating link to the military. I wanted to bring in Dr. John Apt. He is the director of the UK SMRI. Dr. Apt, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good evening.
Could you explain basically in civilian terms, if you would, what is the purpose behind UK's SMRI, and what do you guys hope to accomplish over there?
Sure. Well, it's a multidisciplinary research institute, and what I mean by that is we're pulling together a lot of different disciplines of professions to really look at optimizing health, and as you indicated, some within the military, but the majority of our research is, to this point, has focused specifically on the military to evaluate injury patterns and determine strategies that these injuries may be prevented or even from a recovery standpoint. But beyond that, it reaches into the athletic realm, and whether we're talking to UK athletes or to the recreational athlete within the Commonwealth.
So are there a startling, if that's the right word, number of similarities in the injuries and the rehabilitation patterns and things like that between the athletes and the military people you study?
Oh, absolutely. We started this research with the military probably about 15 years ago, and at that time had been studying injuries within civilian athletes for another 15 years prior to that. But what struck us as we looked at certain reports of the injury patterns that were occurring is that they were very, very similar to those that we had been seeing for years. A lot of the injuries were occurring during physical training and recreational sport. It wasn't necessarily something like many times you think of a battlefield injury, but
right,
weren't the main mechanisms by which these injuries were occurring.
Are there, though, battlefield injuries involved?
Sure, absolutely, but those are a different area than what we typically study. We're looking at injuries that are more on the preventable type of side, or something that can be modified. Obviously, with a battlefield injury, it's a different situation.
But there is a sort of a parallel facility at Camp Lejeune, right?
Exactly. We have a satellite laboratory, so it's our Sports Medicine Research Institute at Camp Lejeune, and that's where our bulk of our research, specifically with Marine Special Operations, is being conducted. So we have a facility on a smaller scale to what you saw yesterday on the installation, but functionally we're able to collect similar data, whether we're making comparisons between the Marines and to the athletes, but we have those capabilities.
Some folks may have seen on local TV here some video of a jockey literally riding a mechanical horse, and I mean riding it yesterday. Dr. Apt, tell me what the purpose of that is and what you do with that kind of data that you collect.
Sure, and it's an interesting piece, you know, from specifically for myself and something that's new. One of my colleagues in the College of Health Sciences, Dr. Carl Mattapola, has been working with the jockeys for some time now as far as looking at overall injury patterns, and developing a medical model to assist the jockeys for those that are injured during a race. We're looking at, and what you saw yesterday was a protocol that being developed to essentially look at returning to ride So for a jockey, that may have a concussion from a fall from a horse. What are the specific parameters by which they can safely return without causing further impact or injury?
How much of what you do over there will be or can be applied to the scholarship athletes on campus? Or is this sort of designed to help anybody and everybody?
No, I think all of it. It's just on a little bit of a different scale. Whether we're talking the recreational athlete or the collegiate athlete, the professional athlete, or even into the tactical athlete, there's a lot of similarities from a systematic process to prevent injury and to optimize performance, which essentially is the end goal for most individuals. It's just on a different level as to how you actually apply it. And again, whether you're on a court or you're in the battlefield, the safety and the health and well-being of the individual is what we're striving to achieve.
Well, I was going to ask you about the fact that part of your mission there is to study the prevention of injuries. How far have we come in that area over the last decade or two in actually preventing injuries among athletes?
Well, I think it's come a long way. Years ago we were studying mechanisms by which ACL injuries are occurring. And although the injuries still exist, there's different strategies that available now that can reduce those. And the overall training programs that are being implemented at this day are more advanced as well. So the preventative side, we can look at it from a neuromuscular or a strategy of, like, for example, landing, mechanisms by which we can land better. But more importantly, we can also work on the overall training of the athlete or whomever as well. So it becomes more of a comprehensive approach to preventing injuries, bringing in nutrition as well.
You know, through the years, I've had to rehab some knee injuries, and some of the exercises I used to do, or just one or two of them really, now I'm told, those may not be so good for you. Through the years, is there anything that you can tell me that people doing rehab, whether they're athletes or weekend warriors, who we used to do this, and now we're told, you want to stay away from that. You know what I mean? You guys have done so much research, and I'm wondering if there's anything that was recommended 20 years ago that now you should tell us stay away from that.
Well, there's always the controversial stretching. Do you stretch before? Do you stretch after? What is considered a warm up? What is not? Do you need to cool down? That seems to be, I would say that's probably one of the hot topics. Probably still being debated at this point. The piece I would really focus on, particularly when you said about the rehabilitation. Areas at which we're trying to reach upon right now is, we're not talking about just rehabilitating from the physical side of a person. It has to take more of a holistic approach, or again, this multidisciplinary approach. For example, you go to physical therapy, you do your exercises, you may have a home exercise program later. But a lot of times that's where people drop. And they don't perform those exercises. They don't perform because they don't know how. They don't perform because they're not comfortable. They just don't want to. So one of the pieces we're looking at as well that I think is going to improve upon these outcomes is why are patients not doing their – what are the barriers? Is there a reason why they're choosing not to do these exercises that can maybe help overcome that and through some type of – not necessarily virtual, but some type of interaction with the therapist or some feedback to the patient as they're going through the exercises. So it's trying to advance programming to make it more deliverable for the patient.
It's interesting you say that. I was talking to a friend of mine about that just the other day, about the fact that I've rehabbed three different knee surgeries, just cartilage, nothing huge. But when I first had a knee injury in 1981, and I had to go in to wherever I was rehabbing and get them to oversee and all that stuff. And I showed up routinely, and they were surprised because they said most people, as soon as they start to see results, they stop going, they get bored with it, or it's hard or whatever. And I was still young and active and all that stuff. But do you find that's the case, Doc, is that, you know, in our lifestyle these days, people just can't work that in?
Yeah, definitely. Time is obviously an issue. And I think the one point that you brought up about you see improvements and you, all of a sudden you think you can go back to doing your normal activity.
Yeah.
So you're healed and let's go for it. And they may work temporarily. However, you're going to hit that threshold if you're not fully recovered, and you're going to fall back into that endless loop of re-injury. So it just becomes worse the second time around.
Yep. Tell me something that has you really excited right now. Not just the opening of this, but, you know, something that we need to know you guys are working on.
Well, I think, it was a great opening yesterday, and this overall partnership that we have between the College of Medicine, College of Health Sciences, UK Healthcare, and Athletics that really brought the facility to fruition is a critical piece. But beyond that, we've got a collaboration with 7 different colleges within the university itself and associate faculty that are interested in collaborating with us that are so diverse beyond what my background is and my colleagues' background that are within the SMRI. So I think we've got a lot on the horizon, and the contribution of others around and the collaborations that we're going to be able to make are going to provide some pretty unique findings.
So can I tell people you're building bigger and better athletes over there?
Absolutely.
Well, that's good to hear, and I hope you keep us posted on some of the breakthroughs, especially the ones that involve not just athletes, but our friends in the military. Doc, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right. Take care. Dr. John Apt of the UK Sports Medicine Research Institute. It sounds a little dry, but I'm telling you, the stuff they do over there is pretty phenomenal. And as he said, it's going to benefit not just UK athletes, scholarship athletes, but folks like you and me. All right, when we come back, we'll hear more from Rick Pitino. We'll talk more about this mess over at U of L. We'll take your calls at 280-2287, 800-606-4263. You can tweet us at Big Blue Insider. One Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch, and you on the Big Blue Insider, 630 WLAP.
I can make it rain whenever I want it to.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Enjoying the Temptations on my first day back after a few days off. 280-2287, 800-606-4263. You can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Of course, lots to say and hear and do with this U of L story. And Curtis, Rick Pitino had his say today.
Yeah, he talked a lot. And we're going to hear some lengthier comments in the next segment. But there were a couple drops that I rather enjoyed that I think are now on the button bar, and they include...
I'm not answering that question.
That can be very useful for you. And, you know, if a Ryan Lemon guest hosts again, I might have to say...
None of that is true.
I wonder why in the world did that come up while I was gone? Did he have to deny some stuff?
No, I forget exactly what it was. A minor thing about... Oh, I remember what it was. We were talking about Hal Mummy the other night with Ryan, and he didn't realize Belhaven was in Jackson, Mississippi. He thought it was in Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
So I could have, after he said Belhaven was in Louisiana.
None of that is true.
Oh, perfect. Just hang on to that for him. A lot of you tweeted at us, so let's get to them right now. Philip wanted to know... U of L says punishment is too severe. What would they deem acceptable punishment? Philip, that's a great question. I don't know if they were asked. Did you see, Curtis? Did anybody
they
ask
thought
them that?
Their self-imposed punishment was enough.
Wow.
Basically,
you're living in a dream world.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like ever that succinct, but that was kind of their...
Yeah.
Because they said they were going to appeal everything. They probably won't appeal McGee. You know, his show cause penalty, but everything else, I guess they think is too much.
That's, that's just naive. It's just not, you know, Pitino got the job and really made his bones as a college coach. He did a great job at Providence, but was best known for what he did at Kentucky. Well, he took over at Kentucky after the Kentucky shame thing. Now, when he came here, he talked about the fact that he wasn't interested in what had happened before, but I've got to think that at some point he was told, look, here's what happened. Here's the kind of thing you need to avoid. But I guess that was too long ago. Barnstorm 22 said Sandy Bell may be the most important person in UK athletics. She is the compliance director. And I don't know if she's the most important person, but she's one of them. And you know what's interesting to me is either Sandy Bell or one of the people, or maybe more than one, who work under her in compliance, you see them around sporting events and even practices a lot. I've actually heard people in our line of work, Curtis and me, kind of grumbling, what the heck are they doing here? Why are they always around? You know, what in the world? Well, now you know, because all it takes is one idiot to ruin the party for everybody. And I'm not saying, you know, someone's going to be so brazen at a practice or a game to step right in and do something stupid. But, you know, I just think they're making their presence known. They're making it felt. And they're just sort of reemphasizing what they've told the players and coaches. And it's like, step out of line, we're going to be there, whether you like it or not. Billy Gillespie used to complain about that, you know, because he always pushed the edge of the envelope and never got him in trouble, but flirted with it. There were the Gillespie rules and things like that, you know, not necessarily illegal things, but stuff that the NCAA, they changed some of the rules. But anyhow, she may not be the most important, but if you want to keep your nose clean and keep the money in the bank and keep the wins on your side of the ledger, whoever your compliance person is pretty important. Rallycat wants to know, wins vacated, but is the title vacated? We're not going to know that for at least 45 days, because that's how long the appeals process will take. And Curtis, I don't see any way that they don't vacate the title.
Yeah, they weird. The wording of what the NCAA said was just odd. But, I mean, Chuck Smert today talking about the 15 NCAA games would be in the vacation. That's the run. That's the Final Four and the championship.
Yeah. Well, it's like Drew Diener just said, you know, one of the most successful runs in all of college basketball over the last few decades. Browdown going, doing business now as Bob Ballenbrand. To the Rallycats query said, it sounds to me like even U of L has come to that conclusion. Yeah, but I believe Browdown, that's obviously going to be the brunt of their appeal. He also posted a GIF from Seinfeld. If you know Seinfeld, it's Uncle Leo, who tried to use a defense for shoplifting as I'm old and confused and don't know what I'm doing. That's kind of what it made.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Maybe so.
In parts.
Yeah.
I don't get this social media. I mean, at one point, Patino said that he's not up after 10 p.m. because he's 64 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, I know your stance is that coaches don't ever go over there, but he can't because he's so old. He's asleep.
Somebody asked, I guess it was Browdown again. If we agree head coaches don't go to a dorm at night, is it unreasonable to expect someone higher level than a recruiting coordinator does? Look, to me, it doesn't matter what their title is, as long as they're responsible enough and take the job seriously.
Yeah,
you know, and Andre McGee's off the charts. Not only did he not take it seriously, he went, you know, incredibly in the other direction. One of the people who checked on players under Patino is Rock Oliver, the strength and conditioning coach. Not even a quote-unquote basketball coach. But do you think they towed the line for Rock Oliver? I would say they did. As far as vacation goes of the title, Rallycat wants to know, does the letter say that? Did Memphis or any other vacated Final Four say it? Rallycat, I didn't get to see the letter. He said, I just wondered how it was handled in the past. I did not see any of the letters or did not know how that worked at those other schools. But it had to be incredibly similar. Like, you know, you played ineligible players, therefore your banners have to come down. That's got to be the way it was. Philip, Mr. Wildcat 61, tweeted, as Rick should know, only thing open
careful
after
here
3 a.m. are bars, and there's a reference to female anatomy. Let's leave it at that, shall we? I think that's about as far as we can go. Did you think I was going to read that, Curtis?
I thought you were going to jump just... pull a Ron Burgundy. You're just going to be Ron Burgundy and just read what's on the teleprompter.
No, not quite. That's a legitimate concern, and thank you for checking that out. All right, when we come back, we'll hear more from Patino. We'll hear more from you, 280-2287-800-606-4263. Tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Your take is important to us on the Big Blue Insider. 630 WLAP.
When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Sunshine, blue skies, please go away. A girl has found another and gone away. With her went my future. My life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
Kind of a gloomy song. Kind of how they're feeling at the other end of the interstate right now. And angry, of course. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch, welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. 280-2287-800-606-4263. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Again, it's not that people are here to revel in their unhappiness. It's that, to me, the story, it's a big story, of course, what happened. The penalties, it always is. But the reaction and the response by the people in charge at U of L, I think, Curtis, everybody I've talked to about this, at least on this end of the interstate, was just flabbergasted by it.
They sounded like the fan base, which I guess will play well in the fan base, but they don't sound... I mean, we played that clip last hour about Patino talking about leadership. They didn't sound very much like they were leaders. I mean, they were... It's a lot of excuse making, and I get it in this situation why you're making excuses and giving reasons for what occurred. This Rick Bozich just recently put out an article that I linked to on my Twitter account about the word repugnant that the NCAA representative on the conference call after these were released used, and how, you know, this is different than anything else, the details right. about this. And I don't. And I'm going to reference it again, me and you talking before the show. It just, you can say all these things that, and we're going to play more from Patino and a little bit from Jurich. You can say all these things, and they can all be true. But you shouldn't be saying them when these sanctions are coming down on the day for something that is, unprecedented in my, that I can think of.
Absolutely. But again, they believe that the penalties they impose on themselves should have been enough. The missing the tournament, and that was big. It always is. If you've got a team, look, Patino's first year, they couldn't go to the tournament. They weren't going anyway at Kentucky, 14-14. The following year, they were the first place team in the SEC, so it hurt a lot more. And that would it hurt them to not go the year they sat out. They had a really good team. There's no question about it. That just ain't enough. And, you know, they docked themselves scholarship. Fine. You played ineligible players. What did you think was going to happen? Curtis said he's got some more sound bites for us. I will say this, that Browdown checking in again talked about the fact that they had one guy monitoring the dorm, and even the security cameras failed to monitor the dorm. A friend of mine who works on campus, not at the dorms, but is familiar with how they work, he pointed out, first of all, I don't know if he was the one who told me supposedly, and I don't know if this is true, he told me he thought there was one door that was not monitored at that dormitory, which is stupid if that's the case. But secondarily, he was telling me that an independent company, not U of L students, work the front desks and supposedly watch the cameras, the monitors, after 5 p.m. And so my buddy was like, why has nobody held that company accountable, that kind of thing? I don't know. And do we have someone waiting to go on there, Curtis, or Ken? All right. How you doing, Ken?
Yeah, I'm fine. Long-time listener. The only thing I think they're going to throw Patino out for it so with. But what I'm concerned about and have been concerned about, when are they going to come down on North Carolina? They've been whitewashing that thing for I don't know how long now.
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to address that here right now, Ken. So let me do that, and I appreciate your call. All right?
Okay.
Pat Forty, I know most of you don't like Pat, but I've known Pat for a long time. Good writer, good reporter, Yahoo Sports, been on the show. He writes about that. He writes about that today. Now, remember, Pat lives and works in Louisville. He's a national columnist, wrote a book with Patino. They've had a working relationship, but he writes about the fact that U of L responded the way it did. But then he also talked about the fact that the reaction among the fan base was just don't take the banner. Probation, scholarship reductions, fine. Just don't take the banner. And he said, leadership at other schools nationally should be on high alert, especially in Chapel Hill. Kenny, they have taken a long time on this, but as I've said before, there were literally thousands of people involved in the North Carolina deal. And not everybody has chosen to cooperate, which makes it more difficult. But I've got to think they're closing in. And if you see the Louisville investigation for what it is, and that is penalizing a school that played ineligible players, well, if and when they finally can figure out which athletes who played for North Carolina during that long period of time, which one of those athletes should not have been eligible academically, then they can figure out the proper penalties. And as Pat writes, and I'm quoting now, they might as well start unclipping the fasteners holding North Carolina's basketball banners aloft in the Dean Dome for the 05 and 09 titles. Both of those were compromised by academic fraud, even though the school has been tenaciously rebutting the NCAA's jurisdiction to even apply sanctions in the case. And he's right. He's right. Academic fraud. I was told when Kentucky got nailed in the late 80s that the holy trinity of things you don't do, give cash to recruits, lie to the NCAA, academic fraud. And it was determined back then that Kentucky did all three. That's why it got hit so hard. And we're not going to debate that right now. That's over and done. Since then, they haven't had any problems in basketball. Academic fraud in North Carolina's case, and it's got to be big, but this is such a big scope of this investigation. That's why it's taken forever. And look, if the NCAA hammers Louisville the way it did, and again, yeah, what happened there was repugnant. Is academic fraud any less? It's repugnant in a different way. They're cheating these kids. They've got to, don't they? Am I right?
We'll see. The biggest factor that everyone talks about is if the NCAA is willing to concede the fact that Patino didn't know, then it's just about to go down for a lot of guys. Hugh Freeze, Roy Williams. I mean, you can't.
Right.
If they come to find out that these violations occur, it doesn't matter that the head coach didn't know.
Exactly. Well, that rule changed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Curtis is alluding to the fact that it used to be that the head coach could even prove he didn't know. But in this day and age now, the rules written the way they are, it doesn't matter. And I still think, and you can call me naive, I do not believe Patino knew. Why? Because it was so stupid and tawdry and cheap. If I'm a head coach making $3-5 million a year and my legacy is at stake, to Seth Greenberg's point, if my legacy is at stake, if my job's on the line and I see this dope running hookers and strippers into a dorm named after my best friend, I can't fire that guy fast enough. You're trying to take the money out of my bank account by doing this stupid stuff. You get rid of him now. Why in the world would any head coach put his hand by his eye and say, oh, I didn't see a thing? Ridiculous. But you know what? It doesn't matter. Does it?
Well, you want me to play devil's advocate there?
Yes. Please.
And while I agree that I don't think Patino had any direct knowledge, if things are getting done, you let them get done.
But they weren't.
They won a national title with those guys.
Yeah, but they weren't. Those weren't like.
That's getting it all the way done.
That weren't like.
Shane Bohannon was a 5-star recruit.
Was he a 5-star?
Yes, he was a 5-star recruit.
Well, I heard my guys on HAS today. They said he wasn't.
Okay, well, at worst, he was a four-star recruit. And Louisville was languishing in bad recruiting, and this is coming as Calipari is joining Kentucky, and their recruiting is at the top of their game.
If you're Rick Pitino, do you really believe, to play your devil's advocate, do you really believe that that's something you have to do to land recruits? He's never had to do that to land recruits.
I agree with you that he does not have direct knowledge, but I say something's getting done, you let it get done. You don't ask too many questions.
Well, but the argument is Pitino knew what was going on.
I don't see a ton of people making that argument that are not, you know, dyed-in-the-wool blue Kentucky fans that just want to see Pitino be taken down.
Right. But well, you're making the NCAA's argument that
yes, exactly.
He should have been looking over Andre McGee's shoulder, right?
Or had a little more oversight. He just needed a little bit more.
You've got to have a
little more. You have checks and balances. You have another guy checking in on him.
Well, I can see that. More than one set of eyes. It's like Major League Baseball scouts. They don't send just one scout.
Yeah, exactly.
They send a cross-checker.
I think that could have solved this problem.
As long as the guy would have been smart enough to go back and say, Rick, we got a problem.
Yeah.
And it's Andre, and we need to kick his butt out of here. What else you got?
You want to hear Rick Pitino talking about how he doesn't believe in the NCAA anymore?
Please.
Personally, I've lost a lot of faith in the NCAA and everything I've stood for the last 35 years with what they just did. Now, that is a committee, so you can't hold everybody accountable for a committee's decision. So I'm going to put all my faith and all my beliefs in the appeals committee that they will do the right things for the university, for the players, for everyone else. Because we sat down and made some very tough decisions a year ago in imposing those penalties, and it did severely hurt our program. And none of us do not feel extreme remorse, regretting everything that what went on inside that dormitory. We've said that many, many times. But this is over the top. It's to the point where it's not even conceivable what I just read. It's not even conceivable, believable.
What they view as the difference between what they deserve and what was given is so far like different than anyone else. I haven't seen anyone say, I'm speaking from a national standpoint, that you know this is way too much. Have you heard anybody say that? And well, I mean, way too much. I mean, there could be some. Jay Billis is always. Hates the NCAA, so he questions everything they do.
Right.
But I mean, everyone thought this was a possibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Except for the people in the UofL athletic department, which is just unconscionable. It's like they live in a whole parallel universe.
Living in denial. That's true. It's exactly right. And you want to say, you know, what color is the sky in your world? I mean, with all due respect, come on. How can you believe that the penalties that were leveled against you, that you leveled actually to yourself, how can you believe that they're going to turn it over, investigate, get as much as they can, come back, pat you on the head and say, good job, you're good. You just can't think that. You know, I just think, and to me, it's an all or nothing. Look, I feel bad for them. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people are good. My brothers are UofL fans. My sister's a UofL fan. You know, I get that. But if a guy on your staff screws up, you know, we've seen it here. Claude Bassett almost single-handedly took down Kentucky football and ruined however many seasons for Kentucky fans, for season ticket holders. Do I think Hal Mumme knew what he was doing? No. Do I think Hal Mumme did a good job of keeping an eye on him? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I really don't think Mumme spent any energy trying to foster an atmosphere that underscored the fact that you cannot do this crap. You just can't.
I got one more bite from Pitino, and it just made my skin crawl today. And it was he talked about Jim Valvano in an interaction they had.
Yeah, go ahead.
I once saw Jimmy Valvano and this was way before he got sick. And I recommended him for a pro job, and he was going through some tough times at NC State. And then I saw him later on, and when he was just about getting sick, I said, Jim, how you feeling? He said, you know, the NCAA investigation broke down my immune system. And I always thought about that, and I asked Bobby if that was true, if did I remember it the right way, and he said, yes. And believe it or not, it can tear you apart, inside and out. That 11-hour meeting, besides everything else, can kill you inside because you know what you stand for and what you believe in.
You know, we often talk about, you know, awareness on the court. Patino lacked so much self-awareness in the press conference today. Everything that he said, and he could believe, and most of it could be true. But there's a time and a place for those things. And for basically to trot out the death of Jim Valvano, how public that was with his cancer. And I mean, in so many words, blame the NCAA for breaking down his immune system. This was not the time to share that story.
No, I fully agree. You know, and yeah, I'm sure it takes a toll. It's unbelievably taxing, but it's as Curtis points out, it's the wrong time and place to try to play the sympathy card there.
And he could, at some point, in all honesty, with your thought process that he knew nothing about it, and which most people believe, he deserves some sympathy. But to ask for sympathy at this very instant, which
is that way.
Exactly. It was the way he did it, and how I just can't believe for a man so smart to do something that was just so, as I said, just made my skin crawl. I just didn't like it.
I've got to think that there were people who work at U of L who had a similar reaction, who had to be thinking, please stop. Please stop now.
Yeah.
You know, but had no way of doing it. Had no way of throwing themselves on top of the microphone and saying, that's it, folks, you know, or whatever. And I'm sure that people who were sitting up there with him were nodding their heads in agreement. Yeah, what he says. It's just tough. And, you know, I hate to keep going back to the UK stories of the past, but that's all I've got in terms of the experience that I've dealt with. And I remember after the basketball, there were two in the 80s, and one of them turned out to be, you know, there was just nothing came of it. But the second one is what got them drilled. And a lot of people were upset that UK didn't stonewall, didn't fight it, and all that stuff. Well, what they did was, first of all, they went and hired Sam Newton, which put a stop to a lot of the talk about Kentucky being a rogue outlaw program because of his reputation. And I know there are some people who didn't like him, but if nothing else, he put Kentucky in terms of reputation, pulled it out of the muck. What he also did was hired Rick Pitino. Now, what did that do for the program? Regardless, put aside what's going on today. He hired Pitino, and that started this era, this new era of Kentucky basketball, 2 years under Gillespie notwithstanding. And since then, it's been just basketball, none of this nonsense, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things they did was stand there and just say, all right, that's our penalty, let's go. They didn't like it. They moved on. Pitino complained about the penalties he inherited from the NCAA, but he moved on with it. I can tell you this. Somebody on the inside of UK back then, when all that stuff was going on, told me this. He said, you know what? We got caught, and it could have been a lot worse. With regard to the penalties, it could have been a lot worse, which is obviously why you just shut up and move on. They're not doing that down the road. Appeal, sure. But are we going to have to go through this again 45 days from now? Probably. We'll come back and close things up here on 630 WLAP. Just a few seconds left, and we'll let Rob's tweet kind of wrap things up. He said, guys, I am an avid UK fan, but I take no pleasure in watching U of L and our ex-coach twist in the wind. I think a lot of UK fans probably feel the same way. A lot of UK fans, though, are happy that they're going through the misery. Finally, on this day in 1977, Doug Flynn traded for Tom Seaver. Multiplayer deal not straight up. Why? Why?